3-1. There's a swing and a high fly ball deep left field. You can forget that one. That baby is long gone. Over the bullpen for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He keyholed one, and he certainly figured out that baby. He turned it around in a hurry. An absolute no-doubter for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
What a relief. Vladdy. Yep. What's up with Vladdy? Is Vladdy ever going to hit a home run again? One home run in May. What's up with Vladdy's swing? Guy listening, obviously, Carlos Pena's interview, met with his coaches, said, hey, Carlos Pena's, this is the easy fix. Show me the video. They obviously did that. Bang! Blackata. Home run for Vladdy. What a sweet moment in a blowout game for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to finally get a home run. So, Vladdy hits the home run. Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, Ailish. Mike Smith avoids an all-time choke moment last night. Like an all-timer. Like truly all-timer. Vladdy hits a home run, and it had me feeling like I was a little jealous of both of those guys, because I think one of the best feelings you can have is where you get that like huge sigh of relief, you know, like you think something bad is going to happen, you're stressed out about something, and then boom, it turns out to all be fine. And you get to be like, wow, everything is great. It's just like, it's the weighted bat, you know, where it's nothing was really even wrong in the first place. Most of the times, like, you create these things, you put these mental hurdles in front of yourself, and then, oh, wow, I'm so relieved that the worst thing didn't end up happening to me. Those guys were both kind of facing down the barrel of, like, real things not being great. I wonder if there's something that comes to mind for you guys, like huge moments of relief, like sigh of relief, moments where you breathe a sigh of relief.
Well, there's another one just last night where the Mavs almost blew that 29-point lead against Golden State.
So yeah,
it was just a night of people you expect
more
eight, from.
They got it to 10? What did they get it to?
Yeah, they got it to single digits.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, their close win probability hit 3%. At one point, but when you're down 29 a couple minutes earlier, it feels like a big one. So it's just a night of reliefs. Mine is like not a directly sports one, but we've been doing this show for 8 months now.
Mine's not sports. There's no sports.
We've been doing this show for 8 months, and we are online usually sometime between 5:30 and 5:45. I would say at least a dozen times I've woke up panicking, thinking I slept in for some reason, something I dreamt, or, you know, I hit the snooze button or something. And then the relief of realizing I did not sleep in and I'm going to be on time still. This is a weird one because it's not a real thing. It's just my brain playing tricks on me. But
well, that's
that,
the best.
Oh no, I'm not going to be late after all. I can sleep five more minutes. It's only 4:50. That's the big one in the last 8 months.
Blake, listen, that's a perfect one. And it actually relates to the first thing that one of the first things that came to mind for me is, and I think that this is probably just a lot more, this is a little bit more of a modern one as well, maybe a little bit more of a relatable one, because not everybody, but everybody always worries about waking like late for work. And then the relief of thinking you slept in late only to realize that you have more time to sleep is incredible. Like, truly, it's one of the biggest W's that you can accrue. Like, it is a huge W. If it's, and even when it's like anything over 20 minutes of extra sleep is just wow. Because if you wake up a couple minutes before your alarm, you feel like you've cheated yourself, you know, like it's a L, but 20 minutes or more, you're right there in the win zone. But mine was similar, which is when you wake up hungover, that first check of your phone, making sure you didn't do anything bad, and finding out you did nothing bad, what a relief. Just the hangover anxiety that you wake up with, like, oh my God, I actually got pretty blackout, I guess, last night. Oopsies, oopsie daisies. And then scrambling to your phone, finding your phone, first of all, that's even like a part of the relief is like, oh, did I lose my phone? When you collect all the things that you realize, like, oh my God, I made it back from the bar with my sunglasses. I went out at noon yesterday. How are these still here? What a What a relief. Your wallet is there. You've always, I'm always assuming that I've lost all my stuff every single time that I've gone out and had too much to drink. But that feeling of finding your phone, your sweet, sweet phone, looking at it and seeing no, like, angry message or no texting of an ex or no Instagram slide, like, all those things together is, to me, the greatest relief. Like, that, so, that's it.
This is called hangxiety, by the way, the hangover anxiety. But are you a check multiple times to, like, relive that sense of relief? Like you get up at 9 and you check and you're like, oh, thank goodness. But then, like, you've had something to eat and maybe a nap, and then you're like, you know what? I should check one more time just to be safe in case I was still, like, a little drunk this morning.
I feel like if I do it, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like if I have done it bad enough where it's the anxiety – if I don't know by 9 a.m., then it's not my fault anymore, you know?
You've missed the statute of limitations on being mad at you?
Yeah, yeah. If you come to me at noon and you're upset about something, no, I'm sorry. That's not again, and you have the receipts of your own messages, right? Like, I'm someone who doesn't let things go. Maybe you guys have noticed? No?
A little bit.
Just so if there's nothing, if there's no paper trail on my end of things, like if I haven't done anything, then we're golden, you know? It's like I can recover from things that I said. Like, I can't recover from things that are hard evidence on the phone. Like, that's a totally different thing. Ailish?
Yeah, so mine would be the second the show ends and I close my laptop and I don't have to see you guys anymore. Huge sense of relief.
Womp.
Just the rest of my day. No,
recycling the joke I made off air before the show.
I was going to pick the ones about sleep as well, since our lives revolve around sleeping. But I will say, second best feeling, when a cop car passes you with its lights on and you think that you're going to get pulled over for something, even though you've done nothing wrong, you have your seatbelt on, you haven't been speeding, and you're like, what would I do? And then it passes you and you keep, oh my God, you're like, what a relief. I honestly had no idea, but something, was my sticker expired? Like, you think something's going on, but yeah, that's a huge relief.
I love the cousin of that one, noticing the speed trap just early enough.
Oh.
Honestly, I don't know what it is, but there is something. There's just really, like, the relief of just a cop leaving your orbit is great. You know, like, anytime.
So much so that we should just get rid of all cops and we'll all have just a huge relief all the time.
Yeah, go to Portland, see how that works. but, anyways, it's, boy, you look around and you see a cop, and it's just immediately you feel like you're back in school, where you're like, the teacher's looking at you and you're like, okay, gotta have my A behavior here. Like, no drugs on me, sir. I would say that's like the cousin of that one is being at airport security and clearing. Mm. Just getting through airport security. I don't know why. This is probably going to get me on a no-fly list. This is great. But I always feel like I'm Pablo Escobar going through an airport, even though I've never once had anything. Like, I'm always assuming something's going to happen. Like,
your toothpaste tube is slightly too large?
Like, just something. And nothing's ever happened to me. Like, honestly, nothing has ever happened to me. One time I was at a train station.
I once got detained in Germany.
For what?
At the airport. Because
they
said that
they were like, what's up?
No, I put my bag through security and the German security guards with full on rifles came up to me and said that your bag has tested positive for explosives. We are calling the police. 100% Jay, this was 1 year ago when I was going to Latvia.
Have you never told us this story before?
I don't know.
All your Latvia stories are like, oh, I saw some hockey player that was mediocre. I watched Mangiapane play. It's like, great.
They pulled me aside and said, your bag is tested positive for explosives. We have called the police. And I was alone, first of all, traveling alone. And I was like,
detained. You burst into tears right away?
Oh, no. I was just in shock. Like, you know when you can't really react? And you're like, okay. And then they put me in this German security room for at least 30 minutes, 45 minutes. No one's speaking English. And I thought, okay, this is it. This is, like, this is where I end up. This is the rest of my life. Like,
I had
no way
to... You're
going to
be, like, on one of those, detained abroad shows, you know?
Yep,
like, on Netflix or on
A&E. Flight attendant.
Yeah, yeah. You're
and,
one of those.
And anyway, they had to go through all my belongings, my bag. They had to scan everything. And obviously, I had no explosives. Like, duh. Yeah. And they came back with it just being like, okay. They took a photo of my passport and said, like, I don't know, bye. And then I had to fly back through Germany after the trip to Latvia. And again, I was like pulled aside because they knew my face and they had my passport. I don't think I could ever go to Germany now, but it all ended up okay. But it was the scariest thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I like how our huge relief is like sometimes when you're hungover, you look at your phone, and it's just like, you know, when you're in Germany and they say that you've got explosives in your bag and then you don't have explosives in your bags. That, what a huge relief that is. Like, yeah, that is totally a huge relief moment.
Where they check everywhere for drugs except the wheel well of your car. Yeah,
you know,
and you have them in the wheel well of your car. Yeah. And
you know when they say you're a terrorist, but then you're not a terrorist? That's when it feels so good, guys.
Yeah. Like, Ailish, you know, your second life as like Jason Bourne or 007 is not relatable content for the show. I'm sorry.
I love that. That's such a – no, but honestly, though, this is actually – I would say that now, having heard that story from Ailish, that she's the only one who can relate to what Mike Smith went through yesterday. Like, the feeling, because Ailish, when you were in the air, you know, like when you were in the air after that experience and you were on your way home, like, did you get off the plane and you did like the kiss the ground thing where you're like, I'll never leave home again? Because that's how I feel like Mike Smith was yesterday when he got off the ice. Because, like, I'll get into Vladdy, I'll get into the James, but I have to do the Mike Smith thing first. Honestly, now that we're here, I have to do the Mike Smith thing first. That goal he let in, it's the only things I ever relate to NHL goaltenders, the only times that I'm ever reminded that I used to play hockey is when goalies let in horrific goals. It's because I go, oh yeah, I remember what that feeling was like. Mike Smith doing the automatic, like, looking around for someone to blame after letting in a puck from
the other
1,000 feet away was
Is my trapper unlaced? What's going on?
I could not have related to anything more in my life than his immediate reaction, which was just like, what happened? Who did this to me? He was looking around someone to blame. Even in the post-game media conference, he's like, we have the audio of it, but I'm not even going to play it. But he says something like, I didn't see the puck. It's the first time in my career I didn't see the puck. And then a bunch of the other guys said they didn't see it either, so I wasn't the only one. I was like, buddy.
All the other goalies missed it too.
I was like, you guys won. It's okay. You don't need to still defend yourself against this. Like, you're saved. You're saved from the all-time choke moment. But it was hilarious watching it happen.
So it is 6:12 a.m. So for anyone who's driving into work and listening to this and doesn't know what we're talking about, the Battle of Alberta last night, Edmonton has a 3-goal lead. Calgary comes back, and midway through the third period, shorthanded, Rasmus Anderson fires a puck from his own end while still kind of moving backwards, and it beats Mike Smith glove side. And it wasn't even that knuckly on replay or anything like that. Just like a clearing attempt from deep in his own end beats Mike Smith glove side. Luckily, and the relief here is, you know, the Oilers end up winning. Nugent Hopkins bangs in that rebound after the great Yamamoto play to set Barry up, and they escape with that one. But, man, that's I mean, look, I know there are some big ones. There's some big ones even in the Oilers' own franchise history of bizarre goals that find a way in on your goalie or an empty net or whatever. But had they lost that game, that's the top of the bloopers list.
Blake, huge signs of relief. Whoever's listening to the show and who doesn't know what we're talking about, because you've just re-entered civilization and you've just heard radio signals. You know, you got a radio signal and you're hearing the show and now you know about Mike Smith.
You got
some people are probably driving to work. Yeah. And
huge sigh of relief to these people.
Didn't
hearing
get a chance
other humans
to check.
Talk.
Didn't get a chance to check what happened late in that game
totally,
last night.
Totally. Very
trying
professional.
Trying to be a pal.
Yes, very, very good. Very professional. But yes, I sat there after Mike Smith let in that goal, truly like cackling to myself, mouth agape, texting people. That was one of those things, like, normally I try not to throw texts out to people that's too late, because even for Battle of Alberta, I know that not everybody's staying up and watching Battle of Alberta, but I sent out 5 oh my gods or what's or did you see that? Please tell me you saw
your
that.
Your text to me was what with 8 T's.
Yeah.
All caps.
What with 8 T's. Yeah, I sat there truly mouth agape. Like, I could not believe that that had happened. It was from, 132 feet? I wrote it down in our doc because it was 132 feet. And I thought, oh my God, if they lose this series, like, anytime somebody from Edmonton has to go to Calgary, they're just going to be like, where are you from? They're like, oh, Edmonton. And you're like, oh, 132 feet. Like, you're going to have to live with that for the rest of your life. There were going to be
like
Calgary
people. It was
3-1. Yeah, tattoos, 132 feet,
it.
Everything. That would have been one of the most truly, 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 that would have been one of the most remembered things in Canadian hockey history. If they lose that game and then they go on to lose that series, that's the tipping point, right? Like, you have a chance to go up 3-1 and your goalie lets in a goal from 132 feet. Like, Mike Smith is 40 years old. I think he's 40. He might even be 40, like, out of 39, he's 40. Somewhere in that stratosphere. Somewhere in that range.
He's 40 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he might have even been 41. I didn't want to go crazy with it, though. But he's one of the only remaining players from his draft class. He's 40 years old.
One of three. Yeah.
He's been around the game for forever. He's been a Team Canada guy. He's been a franchise player. He's just, man, he's really battled. We've kind of always talked about what the Oilers can do better in net over the last couple of years, but here he is in a series where he's outplaying Markstrom, a guy who people had for the Vezina this year. And his whole career would have been that moment. And yet, I was kind of rooting for the choke job. I hate to admit it, but I was 100% rooting for the choke job.
What about our Oilers, JD?
No, I like our Oilers, but here's what I like more. Our Battle of Alberta. I would have wanted more games. And I would have wanted that to be a story because it would have been such a compelling one. Yeah, like, how do you bounce back from that if you're Mike Smith? Do you have to go to somebody else? Career just defining. That's like, okay, people used to say, hey, Bill Buckner, it wasn't really his fault, and they had all these different things. But it's like Mike Smith becomes like supercharged Bill Buckner in Edmonton. This is so much, I don't want to say bigger than the Yankees losing, the Red Sox losing the World Series. But like, boy, was Buckner, now I'm even forgetting if Buckner was a
Met.
Soccer. Met, that's it. Okay, yeah. So I was like, no, that doesn't make sense. He's not, not Red Sox.
Mike Smith, Ailish. Fan of the friend of the over, also letting that one in and making sure.
Yes, he was very nice of him. That's another 100% thing of relief that I was going to put in our list is like when you
winning your bets.
Hit the over on like an empty net or something.
Well, a huge relief hitting your bets when it's like your when you put the account on it where you're like, okay, this is the one. Mm-hmm.
What is winning a bet like, by the way?
Regionally, I don't know. You'll have to. I mean, it was nice to win yesterday, but yes, I don't know what to tell you. I'm Mike Smith in Edmonton. Would have been a pariah. He would have been not welcome. He would have truly, truly, truly been the most despised player in Oilers fan history if they lose the Battle of Alberta on that goal. Like, his whole career goes down the toilet if he lets that in. And still, I was rooting for the Flames. Am I a bad person? Like, were you rooting?
Yes.
You were rooting for Edmonton to win that game? Like, I'm just...
No,
I was totally rooting for Calgary.
You spun the narrative. I would have liked... I like more Battle of Alberta games. I think it would have been a funny storyline. But the sad part is, you're right. It would have been enemy number one of the people. End of his career. Just plastered all over. It was 132 feet. A little bit of a sad twist to it. But I want more hockey, so I'm on the fence with this one.
Also, I can't imagine Oilers fans would ever allow a Smith to be on their team again. And I know Ryan Smith is like the Edmonton Oiler, but Steve Smith is the guy who in 1986 scored on his own net in the, I think it was the conference finals.
Whoa, that's weird.
So it was, that's like one of the biggest own goals of all time. There's also, do you guys know where Mike Smith ranks in all-time playoff save percentage?
I do not know that answer.
Second.
Oh.
He's number two. Now, it's only 40 games. It's not a huge playoff thing.
How many games?
40 playoff games. He has a .931 save percentage. It would have been very weird to look back on the one of the best playoff performers statistically of all time between the pipes and have him be defined by this one fluky goal. So good for him. Yeah, this would be more fun if it were a 2-2 series. The one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about, 132 feet sounds like a lot in hockey, and then I'm thinking about it, I'm like, wait, home plate to second base is 127 feet. Then it doesn't seem that much. Like, to score from second base on a slap shot doesn't seem that weird. I don't know. I had a weird
geometry. You couldn't even raise
brain.
The puck for 20 feet. All the
I
way.
Can't
like,
believe
he,
that.
He, like, crushed it. It didn't even hit the ice.
I know.
That Mike Smith stat is jarring to me because, obviously, he had that 1 year in Phoenix where they went on the deep run. And he was, like, the story of Phoenix. And it was Phoenix at the time. But...
He had a .944 over 16 playoff games that year.
Yeah, okay. So, but I'm still surprised that he would be that. This is, but that's what I mean. Like, he, so basically, he's number two because he went on one awesome run, and then from that point forward, never went past the first round.
Where's Vasilevskiy?
Or until this year?
Yeah, no, I think more or less. The like 40 games is a low-ish bar.
No, it's low. It's low because it's
Korpisalo's actually first, and he only has 10 games. So
yeah, that's what I mean.
If you this wanted to up the minimum, like pick a game number, 50, 100. What's the cutoff for you?
I honestly, I don't know what the cutoff would be. I would just say that, like, yeah, Mike Smith has been in the playoffs as a starting goaltender. I want to say three, four times. Like,
six.
I can't. Six times as a starter?
Well, five as a starter and one as a he played one
sure.
game.
That's what I mean. It's like all his teams have stunk, and like he's never...
Which almost makes the 931 more impressive.
Yeah. That stat threw me off a little bit where I'm like, listen, this guy... I want to talk to people about this over the next couple of days, which is a question of like, hey, is Vasilevskiy the greatest big game goaltender ever? And if that's the case, is he not the greatest, right? Like, is he not the greatest goaltender of all time if we agree he's the biggest big game goaltender ever? Like, if you're going to say that, it's like, well, that's what I would want, right? That's what I would want, is the greatest big game goaltender is, to me, the greatest. It's kind of like the automatic qualifier. It's like a trap door. Mike Smith is not that. I don't care what his save percentage is. Mike Smith's a guy who went on one amazing run in, like, you know, over a decade ago with Arizona.
Tuukka Rask would be the one competition to Vasilevskiy. They have identical career playoff save percentages, but Rask has played over 100 playoff games.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, see, I got to have 100 playoff games. I can't have whatever Mike Smith's is, like 40, but yes, okay.
It's it can't be as high as 100.
I'm just saying it didn't feel like
only three guys who've ever done that.
I'm just saying it didn't feel like we were watching the legacy of a guy that was like an all-time playoff performer.
I know. If this was a one big number stat quirk, it can't be as high as 100 because only three goalies have ever played 100 playoff games.
Fine.
So we got to lower it a little bit below that, but...
That's crazy, too. Only three guys played 100.
Mike Smith is 26th in all-time playoff games started. It's a weird thing.
Wild.
Goalies don't stick around long at the highest levels. That's where your case for Vasilevskiy gets really, really strong, where it's like, oh, who's even played that much playoff hockey? And it's like Rask, Lundqvist, Fleury, and Braden Holtby.
Wow. That's pretty wild. That's pretty wild. I was just going to say that, like, I have no Mike Smith playoff memories other than these last couple of years in Edmonton and that one year in Arizona. But moving off of him is just, I'm a little disappointed that we're not going to get more games. And I would say that to me anyways, the story of that series has just quickly become how this Oilers group that has, I don't want to say they were ever overlooked because they have McDavid and they have Dreisaitl. And so they're always about their front end talent. They're over their stars. But this year, Calgary, I did some hits on their radio stations, and they were always crying about how Johnny Gaudreau wasn't getting enough love, that he wasn't getting enough national love. I'm serious. It was like, oh, there's too much Matthews talk, and there's always McDavid talk, and look at these guys, 5-on-5, best line in hockey, best line in hockey. These guys are the best line. This is the one that's not – well, guess what? Look at their games. And I know that we don't do plus-minus anymore. They're minuses ever since that first game, which was the wild one. Every
you do plus single, minus when Connor McDavid's like plus 20 or whatever he is at 5-on-5 in the series.
Dash, 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 dash. That entire line. Nothing. Nothing from those guys from the last three games. So we can talk about Markstrom not living up to his expectations. Guess what? Markstrom let in a horrific goal last night, but from that point forward, he was pretty much a stud. Like, he made monster save after monster save after monster save. And after that, I go, okay, well, when are these guys going to make a play? And everyone's criticized Sutter for not playing these guys enough, and they've been trying to find excuse after excuse after excuse. But to the story of this series to me is, yeah, Mike Smith outplaying Markstrom. That's a big point of emphasis in this thing that I don't think anybody expected. But you could have told me that McDavid and Kane and Dreisaitl were going to outplay the Gaudreau line. I wouldn't have thought after game one, where Tkachuk gets a hat trick, granted on an empty netter, and we're all losing our minds about how he's going to have the impact this series and how good that line is, that Calgary Stars would completely go to sleep as Edmonton's took over the entire series.
Sorry, I just have to make one correction on those goalie stats. So Hockey Reference doesn't log games played the same way prior to 1991. So 19 goalies have played 100 games. My bad.
Okay.
weirdly, prior to 1991, the games is a different stat for goalies than it is after 1991. Sure. It's very odd. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
It wasn't that big. I was expecting it to be like 1,000.
No. I wanted to correct it before we moved on to.
Or to say he was actually not second in all time. He was 22nd.
Yeah. No. Save percentage wise, he's still second to Tim Thomas. Save percentage wise.
Okay. Timmy T. Talk about a guy that's papered over from history. Anyway, that's my thoughts on that series. We'll get into it more later. We have a bunch of different guests on today. Yaquin Gage, former NHL goaltender, a guy who does a really great podcast out of Alberta. We're going to talk to him about this later, especially the goaltending stuff. But back to the Jays. Before we take a break, we got to talk a little bit about the Jays. Because, yes, huge relief for Vladdy. He hits that bomb. The game at that point is feeling a little out of hand, but that's crazy also to think about considering where this team's bullpen is at. I guess how much are you reading into Vladdy's night? Because the guy got on base, like he got on base three times.
I liked it a lot. And yeah, the game was like, it was getting there, but it was only 6-0 in the sixth inning. You could absolutely envision a scenario where the bullpen blows that or gets away from it. So I was very encouraged by Vlad's game. You look, and some of this was Jordan Hicks giving him pitches to hit up in the zone, which is great. We've talked about that Vlad is, I actually have a fast breakdown coming today on a big part of Vlad's problem right now is an inability to lay off low and away stuff. So kind of what Carlos Pena said yesterday with us was, hey, pick something high in the zone and wait on that. And don't, you're a good enough hitter that if you get two strikes, you can hit with two strikes. Wait on something high in the zone. Even his strikeout, I thought he did a good job managing the at-bat and waiting for something he could try to drive up in the zone. He just happened to miss on it. Again, the single early, he waits for a pitch high in the zone and gets it. The home run, same kind of thing there. He waits. He fouls off one that he probably should have had in play and then drives one that he gets up in the zone, a mistake pitch from Verhagen. I'm encouraged. The walks, whatever. But the process behind those two hits was pretty good. And even the strikeout, there was good process behind it.
Yeah, I don't know how you can't feel a little bit positive after last night's game. And Charlie put it pretty well in the post game, saying everybody needed this day. It's great to see the offense come alive. And it's true. You know, we were in a little bit of a, should we hit the panic button? What's going on with the Jays? And there's a lot of things to circle in terms of this needs to get better. This needs to get better. It's not fixed, even though jokingly I said, hey, the Blue Jays are fixed, but it's something to build on. You know, they got a big weekend ahead, a big series ahead. So if you're going in feeling a little bit positive, getting, you know, Danny Jansen, the stud of the team, hey. You got Vladdy hitting bombs. I just think that's hopefully something that can carry. I don't know if I think momentum in baseball is something that I actually feel is a realistic thing. Whereas sometimes we talk about that in hockey where, hey, it doesn't from game to game, there isn't that momentum. I really do feel like in baseball, you can build on that. So more of a, hey, let's see what happens next game, but a great step in the right direction, of course, to get some actual runs and have them smiling again in the dugout.
It is big. Like, it is huge. It's a whole bunch of different things. Like, again, it's still May. So whenever I have a thought on something, I go, there's more than 100 baseball games to be played. There's more than 100 baseball games to be played. Just relax. But, yeah, we do have enough of a sample now where, like, warning signs can be pretty spooky. Like, a player of Vladimir Guerrero's ilk going a month with only one home run is something that you flag and you talk about. It's not hot takey. I still think that it's weird. It's good that they ended up getting that offensive output before an off day, because it would have been a two-day media cycle, a little bit at least in this city, or fans just kind of fretting over it and going like, oh. I will say this. To me, my experience has been that people are pretty discouraged by this Blue Jay start. Like, I have had a lot of people reach out to me and be pretty disappointed. We go over this time and time again, but having an offense that just provides you with nothing is hard to watch. It's hard to go down to the ballpark and have yourself a good time when you don't feel like your offense can score any runs, when it's ground ball after ground ball. And watching a star scuffle is a tough one. So them hitting this off day right after they do it, I don't know if there's momentum game to game, how this thing operates or whatever. But I just like that they were able to do this and that there's a little bit of a positive vibe going into this day off. And if Charlie has his whole hitting is contagious thing, which he keeps running out there as like one of his number one tropes, they better start to hit, because this can't just be a one-off and then everybody goes back in the tank. Because weirdly, I think that almost makes it worse. Like, if these guys can't get a little bit of a run here, then it does start to get in your head. Like, oh, we didn't just get over it. Now we're back into it. They got to string some games together where this team hits. But God, you have to start somewhere. Just, I don't know how I feel about the off day coming right after you finally get off the schneid.
I think it's fine. I think you don't want to go on an off day, especially with how much of their struggle have been process oriented. So,
oh yeah, it's better than the alternative. I just mean it kind of sucks.
But to Ailish's point about a big series this weekend, you're also heading into a four gamer against the best offense in baseball so far. So yeah, you better get those bats going because the Angels are not going to give you any quarter when it comes to what the environment of this series is going to be like. Even like, super fun series, best offensive baseball so far, gets the best rotation in baseball so far. The Angels miss Gausman, but whatever, it's still a really fun series. And JD, you mentioned it's harder to go down to the ballpark or whatever. It's harder to stay up for 10 p.m. Baseball games three nights in a row. And I was talking to your pal Sam McKee yesterday, and he was, you know, if we use him as kind of a bellwether for the fan base, he's like, yeah, I'm just a casual now because this has been so frustrating to watch. So couldn't be better timing to get it going. And if it carries over into this weekend, because if it doesn't, you're going to get your brains beat in by a team that can hit, can pitch a little bit, and again, can really, really hit. You're going to see what a good functioning, ready all the time lineup looks like with Trout and Ohtani at the top of that thing.
Listen, but Sam is not a good barometer of fan base, okay? Like, this is the thing. He's way too emotional. Like, that guy, the most emotional guy. There's no, he's just a big crybaby. He doesn't get things his way.
I mean, he wears number 77, so
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Like, him being, I'm a casual fan of the Blue Jays is like, just, this is you not being friends with that guy for very long. This is 100% like a classic page one Sammy move of like, oh, I'm out on this team, or boo-hoo, boo-hoo. First good game, the first guy to text you about how great things are is him. Oh, total front runner. Like, cannot be in steerage. Needs to be in the front class or first class. That's just him as a sports fan. Complete front runner, 77, like Ailish just said. But to give us that JT pick. But either way, yeah, I think that you can turn that around very quickly. We'll talk to Blair about some of the stuff, but yeah, like, again, you're right. Playing the Angels, making sure that you continue that, it's going to be huge for them. I can't wait for best on best. I think that that's so fun, the starters against the Angels hitting, because the Angels bats are nuts. I also think that it's a real moment for Vladdy playing Mike Trout, where you go,
and Shohei.
Yeah. You're right.
Even for the MVP, you got to want
that
one.
You're right. Mm-hmm. In my brain, I just think about like how I've been feeling this last month, which is we've done the thing with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. where he had an awesome season and everyone anointed him as the best hitter in baseball. And it's fine because you have a season like that and everyone's been expecting you to be the best hitter in baseball, that those things happen. But the fact of the matter is Mike Trout does exist. And like, as someone who bets on sports often and pays attention to the scores, I'll tell you that it's when you have an under bet or you have bet against the Angels and Mike Trout comes to the dish, there's just like, I swear to God, he's on base half the time. Like,
he's slugging on base 700.
Yeah. No, he's
in
he's
the dead ball season.
Yeah. He's insane. And I think we got a little disrespectful of him with getting excited about Shohei naturally and Vladdy's season naturally. But I'm even, again, looking at the Yankees and what Aaron Judge has done to start this year in a contract season. There's just certain things around baseball where you look at them in the American League and you go, this is what a stud bat has to do to carry a baseball team sometimes. And so for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you're right, Blake. Like, that's a great story angle that we'll probably explore the next couple of days, which is like, in baseball, does that really happen? Is that something that players do? Because in basketball, it's obviously a thing. It used to be more of a thing. Now everybody's best friends with each other. They all played AAU, and they don't care who wins. They're just so happy that everybody's getting paid. And they're like, I'm so happy for you, bro. No, I'm more happy for you. There's like
get
nobody.
That bag, King.
That's why Giannis is the best and Luka, because these guys aren't from the States. And so they come here, and they piss everybody off because they're like, yeah, I don't care. I'm not going to be your best friend. Like, what do you mean? This isn't friendship hour. This is like we're trying to win an NBA championship. So those two guys are the best. Everybody else is the worst. But in this sport, baseball, I wonder if that's a thing. Let's take a break.
I'm sure the guys get up for it. I'm sure certainly Thursday night it's Ohtani on the hill. I'm sure Vlad would love to hit one off Ohtani, but realistically, there's nothing he can do to slow Mike Trout, and nothing like it's two guys playing against each other who will compare notes.
No, but you can try to outperform him. Like
you certainly could. You definitely want to have a better series than him, especially on his own turf. And yeah, if you're Mike Trout, I don't know that Mike Trout functions this way because he's been so good for so long. But he got forgotten last year because he only played 36 games. He was in and out of the lineup all year, and they shut him down because they weren't very good. This has been a huge – like, he's already played more games this year than he did last year. And, I mean, the numbers are just insane. Like, this is Mike Trout's best season so far. And Mike Trout owns all the best seasons in modern baseball. It's ridiculous. A lot of fun there. A lot of fun in the A-list.
Well, I don't know, actually. This is one of those rare times that you don't – want to be on the A-list. Uh-oh. And both of you guys, I have a competition for you, so go stretch up during
the
break.
I thought you were going to say both you guys are on it, and I was going to be like,
no.
Bleep you.
You'll have to wait and see, but a little competition on the A-list after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A little competition for the fellas this morning on the A-list. And then we'll sprinkle in a little good women's hockey news because that never comes soon enough. So let's get right into it.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So I said it before the break. Sometimes there's a A-list that you don't want to be on. Now, no Googling. Want to see your hands in the Zoom. USA Today did a ranking of the top 10 worst fan bases in sports. Okay. Mm. This list only includes American teams. So Vancouver Canucks fans, you're off the hook. I'm going to give you guys both three guesses to decide to pick. Hold on. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's read the rules here. The points will be rewarded based on which, you know, which placing you get. So if you get the first place team, that's 10 points, et cetera, you know, second, 9. You're allowed to guess the same ones. So like
second is 9. And then there's the 8. Why'd you make this so complicated? It's like should be 10.
I don't know. I thought that was easier. Okay, well, what if you guess what if there's a tie and you've guessed the fourth place one? Anyway.
Yeah, I got you. It's the complicated.
The tiebreaker will be another guess. Picks. Anyway, let's give Blake the first guess because JD's being annoying. So any team, the top 10 worst fan bases in sports, go Blake.
Well, I'm not going to pick a Philadelphia one, even though they're probably high on the list, because JD just said it, and I don't want to be that guy.
You're allowed to pick the same ones. You're going to get three guesses. So you are allowed to pick the same ones if you really think. Like,
so if JD gets one right, I can just – if JD gets one
right, I'm not going to tell you if they're right away. You have to pick three, and then you have to pick three, and I'm going to give you the score. Okay, oh, my God.
Still not going to pick the ones that JD picked.
Okay, so then pick one.
Boston Red Sox.
Oh, wait. Is it cities or is it teams?
It's – worst fan bases in sports.
But yeah, but is it like
so if you are a fan base of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so
it's different than being a fan base of the Toronto Blue Jays.
I got
it.
I already got this. I got this.
Oh boy. Okay. So Blake, that was your first pick. Okay. JD, go ahead.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Well, yeah, you got to go. So, I need more information on like who's voting on this and like at the right. But okay, no,
don't worry about it. It's USA Today.
Eagles, and I'm gonna go.
Okay,
I'm gonna go Philadelphia Flyers. I'm going to keep going with Philly teams.
Okay.
It's a safe bet. I would have the 76ers
last
if you
pick,
didn't already
Blake.
Take a Philly team. I'm going to follow a similar strategy here and just keep it regional with the worst region in the world, and I'll go New England Patriots.
Yeah, and I'll go New York Yankees.
Okay, so you got absolutely body bagged, JD. You end up with 1 point.
Okay.
So JD chooses the Eagles, who are the 10th place on this ranking, so you get 1 point. You pick the Flyers, who were not on.
Yankees fans? Yeah. I actually thought Yankees fans.
Eagles, were being... 1 point for being 10th place. Flyers, 0 points for being zero of the places, and Yankees, 0 points for being zero of the places. Blake starts off with the Red Sox, who are 5th on the list, so you get 5 points. Follows up with absolute.
But yeah.
Why?
Because you go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Wouldn't 5 be 5 points?
No, because you count in the wrong direction.
Cowboys?
Anyway.
Okay. Cowboys, 2nd place. So you get
it's gonna kill us.
9 points. Okay. Is that correct?
Yes.
And Patriots, 3rd place. So you get 8 points. So you
23 to 1.
Single-handedly.
Oh, boy. But we didn't get the number one pick between us.
You didn't get the number one pick, so if you would like to try one last time, just rapid fire. I don't know if you have any idea. Nobody was even close to naming this team.
The number one fan base. First of all, I just need to
USA
explain
Today.
That. I didn't want to pick Yankees because I thought it was just like lame that they were going to be up there. But for the Yankees not to be on that list is... honestly, kind of embarrassing for you Yankees fans. Like, for you not to be there kind of shows that you guys are
annoying.
Losers. No, that's just like you're losers. Like, you can't win.
My guess at number one is now Lakers.
No, they're not on the list.
I will
what?
Guess. No, yeah.
The
no,
whole
Lakers,
basketball
I
Twitter only exists.
I didn't make
basketball
the list.
Twitter only
no,
exists
no,
to
no.
make fun of Lakers fans I, and complain I, about them, about Lakers exceptionally.
How about this? It is a basketball team for first place.
Okay, then... okay.
If this is the Knicks, I'm going to lose my mind because that fan base has
not
been
the Knicks. They're not on the list.
Relentlessly loyal.
Okay, the actual most annoying fan base is Raptors. It's like, but it's like it's going to be. I don't want to say it's Boston again, so I'm going to go with a weird. I'm going to go with Portland Trailblazers.
The answer is the Miami Heat.
Huh?
I don't understand though because they don't
this
have
list
fans.
Sucks. This sucks. This
I'm just telling you, this is what USA Today ranked, and it was going pretty viral. And I'll give you a quick rundown of the 1 to 10. Heat,
Miami,
Cowboys, Heat. I don't know. Heat, Cowboys, New England Patriots, Boston Celtics, Boston Red Sox. Well, 3 in a row for the New England area. St. Louis Cardinals, Golden State Warriors, University of Texas, Notre Dame, and then Philadelphia Eagles.
I got to tell you, if I'm mad at myself for not guessing Warriors when I was given the opportunity because it's like, yeah, of course Warriors would be on the list because they've won so many times now. But this list, if you tell me, you go to a New York Yankees baseball game and go sit in the stands in an opposing uniform and watch the game and cheer for your team versus go to a Miami Heat game in a Raptors uniform and tell me what the experience is like when you do this, those two things as though this is USA Today. Whoever wrote this, wherever you researched this, this is one of those things where I always say, like, to the analytics community, if the analytics come back and they tell you that Martin Marincin is really good, you should throw the analytics out.
Think about
and
it.
You should try again and maybe go over the formula. They've done this with QBR, right? They're always trying to quantify, like, how do we find the perfect quarterback stat? How do we go and get the good quarterback stat that's going to tell us who's the best quarterbacks? And year after year comes back and they'll have it and they'll be like, what did the results say? And they go, Matt Moore is the number one QB in the NFL this season. You go, well, it's time to throw out that list. And that's how I feel about this one with Miami Heat at number one.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's the Patrice Bergeron and Chris Paul test. If those guys don't rank high in any of your individual metrics, especially ones that take defense two-way impact in hockey, if those guys aren't up there, something happened with your metric that's wrong.
So basically, all this is to say is that I should have gotten more than 1 point.
Yeah, my guess is they're overweighting things like the Miami Heat crowd is really late to games and late to come back from halftime. But I would say to that, those aren't Miami Heat fans. Those don't exist.
I think that they must have chosen people that are all our age that would remember the Heatles and that they were front runner fans with LeBron. Like, I can't think of any reason that Miami Heat would be this high. It's very odd.
I can send you the article.
Yeah. No, I believe you. I'm just saying that it's weird.
Oh, no, no. But they put some reasoning in the article so you can see what they think. But, yeah, send in any that you think should have made the top 10. Obviously, there was a couple of random selections or outliers. From our perspective, we are not USA Today.
I mean, Flyers fans are all the same, like, bald guy that's, like, between 6'1" and 6'4", who want to, like, get in a fight and who just, like, say stupid stuff at games. Flyers fans, to me, worst. Like, in your city, when I see people wearing that orange, I'm just like, ugh, get out. You know? That's where I become, like, a protectionist of a border, where I'm like, where are we with this? Like, we got to be more careful. We shouldn't even sell Flyer stuff in this city. Like, it's just an awful team, awful fan base.
So I got a text from my friend Sean in Cambridge. Keep the text coming to the text line 590-590. And he said that he said he guessed Heat number one, and he backs up the pick. And this guy is the biggest sports hater that I know. He hates every team. So if he's on board with the Heat fan base being last, he's an expert in the field.
Does he work for USA
Today? He's an expert in the field in terms of being a hater. So now I'm at least considering Miami for the top 20.
I can't believe you think that he's a bigger hater than me, honestly. Like, I just,
no, but you like stuff also. He doesn't.
Yeah. Miami.
He exclusively watches sports to hate.
Quick text and text line. Duke fans are the worst.
Yeah, it's a good one. But I assumed we were only doing pro sports teams.
Okay. Here's a potential for a pro sports team that might be coming back. Might make you very happy, JD. Report yesterday by a Portland radio host, John Canzano, shared that the NBA is going to announce two expansion teams for the first time since 2004. One in Las Vegas and one in Seattle. Are the Supersonics back, JD?
I didn't see this report, but I will say this is Bill Simmons had a report about, hey, this is going to happen eventually, or this is going to happen soon. A few months ago, there's been years of reports of Seattle getting a basketball team again.
This one seems to be the real report now.
Well, I guess to me it's I'll believe it when I see it, because the one thing there's been a few things. There's been a few reasons why, as someone who, like, obviously tracks these stories very close. One is that the NBA is an insane cash cow, and I heard Mark Cuban's explanation as to why a lot of owners don't want to have expansion, even that the you look at these huge expansion fees and you go, oh, wow, that's amazing. Like, of course they would want that cash influx. But the devaluation of the franchise is pretty massive and a huge thing for these guys to contend with, especially when you're talking about, like, regional broadcast rights, where all of a sudden if you're putting a team in Seattle or you're putting a team in Las Vegas, now you're losing fans that maybe were Lakers fans or maybe that were Portland fans by putting those teams back in. So there are other considerations other than, like, the big bag of money that you end up just getting because of the expansion fees. Two is that the Sonics have been, or the Seattle team, and they will be the Sonics because the city kept the rights after Clay Bennett stole the team from Seattle. They have been such a awesome thing for the league to be able to strong arm different cities into giving tax dollars to stadiums. Like Milwaukee, you'll recall, this happened not too long ago. People of Milwaukee got completely screwed over and paid for the stadium, essentially, instead of billionaires paying for the stadium, because they were worried about the team moving, because the threat was always out there. Well, we could move to Seattle. That's what happened in Sacramento. Sacramento Kings almost moved, essentially. Guess what? Nope. They built you a brand spanking new arena, and the mayor, who's a former NBA player for the Suns, was like, don't worry, we got this covered. We're going to spend a lot of public money to make sure that this thing gets done. I love pro sports, but I hate public money funding stadiums. It really is one of my biggest, like, pet peeves about the industry that we're a part of. And so I am kind of surprised, or would be kind of surprised, if NBA owners would want that chit removed from the equation, which is, well, we will take this team and move it to Seattle. Like, Also, I'm kind of surprised that New Orleans wouldn't be moving soon, or at least have the threat of moving, because New Orleans is a tire fire in the NBA. Like, they're really, really bad, and nobody there cares about that basketball team. And I don't know how long they're going to survive there. And the Benson family trust has been like, we're not going to sell this team to outside buyers. But I don't know. That stuff can shift pretty quickly to me. So I would say that, yes, I'm encouraged by it. Yes, I will automatically become a Sonics fan again. But I've been hearing this for a while now, the whole there's going to be expansion. And until I see the day that I'm having a tougher time believing it.
So just from an economic standpoint, here's what you're looking at in terms of expansion fees. So Adam Silver said a while back that a $2.5 billion expansion fee per team would be on the light end. So let's assume it's $3.5 billion. That's $7
billion. What was Seattle, $500 million in hockey?
I can't recall.
I think it was.
Off the top of my head. So that gets split up across the owners. $7 billion across 30 teams is about $233 million for each team that they'd get. Assuming it all just gets paid out to teams, it doesn't go into, you know, different league funds and stuff like that. $233 million. Based on the current TV deal, each team would stand to lose $167 million if you split that pie from between 30 teams to between 32 teams. Based on this year's luxury tax payments, you'd lose another $1 million this year if you are one of the tax receiving teams by adding two more tax receiving teams. So I would imagine smaller market teams don't want this because you get, instead of 1/30th of the pie, you're getting 1/32nd. And that $233 million for each of the 30 teams doesn't make up all of that. You'd have to make a compelling case that this helps the long-term health of the league and that the annual revenues that these two new teams bring in outweigh the loss in, hey, you're diluting the national TV money pool by 6% by adding two teams. So not as big a slam dunk as you'd think from a pure economic perspective.
That's what I mean. And this isn't about fairness. This is a business, and Seattle has been owed a team for quite some time. Obviously, the NBA would like to get into Vegas, especially with the growth of sports betting. But Ailish, I believe it will happen. I guess all the real debate about the timelines to me is the real thing. And so it's like, when will this happen? I still think is very much in flux. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And we have got Jeff Blair, MLB columnist for Sportsnet.ca, co-host of Blair Barker and Jay's Talk. We've had many conversations about how this team feels about Charlie Montoyo. And learning about Charlie Montoyo. I wonder where he's at as we're about to enter June. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.